Zen Trips, EDM Radio Network.
All right, and we are back. Last week we did our first podcast of this nature. Coincidence or conspiracy, or was it the other way? Conspiracy or coincidence?
Whichever you prefer. I'm okay with either.
I think dyslexic, so.
Lysdexic?
So, we talked about a lot of stuff last week. We covered celebrity deaths. We talked about the Illuminati. We kind of covered the whole spectrum and tried to cram as much as we possibly could.
I think what the other big point that we were going for with the last one was that this is kind of the current thinking on a lot of these things, because it's like the bleeding edge. It just kind of goes in all different directions.
I think it's one point of view. You know, there are many points of view about everything, and this is one of them.
Yeah,
you know, and there's many others.
Well, I'm a firm believer that every probability and possibility works itself out somewhere in some reality.
Well, yeah, whether we're there to observe it or not.
Yeah, because we are experiencing things in a multidimensional sense. We just appear to be stuck in this warp, this distortion, because that's all third dimensional reality really is. I mean, if you stop and think about it, all this energy, people call it God, the universe, all that is, whatever, projects into this world with the light.
Yeah.
So if you really stop and think about it, you think about somebody and then they call you 5 minutes later. There's like a little delay in things. Some of us, it happens instantaneously or simultaneously.
Sure.
But it's kind of like you have this distortion because it's got to go through people's thoughts and the collective consciousness.
Right.
So it's kind of like when you put a stick in the water and it looks like it bends when it goes through that plane. It looks like it's distorted and going. So there is a distortion that goes on.
As you transverse from one plane to the other.
I think the people that control this planet, run this planet, own it, whatever you want to call it, they're trustees of the prison planet. I think that they have enough people and technology that they've mastered this, and they know how to use that distortion or distort it in a way that they want.
Well, I think that it's repeated over and over in society on different levels.
It is repeated.
You know, there's a smaller version of it in the public schools. There's a smaller version of that's in the kindergartens and in the preschools. So, you know, it's this matrix of control that we were talking about.
And it is
about,
a matrix of control.
This system of indoctrination that is so it's like subversive and subliminal that we're not even aware that we're doing it to ourselves. It's like frogs boiling in a pot.
To make a side point, I have never been aware of somebody being a workaholic before I came here. That term does not exist. The word does not exist in the Romanian language. Italian, I speak about four languages. It does not exist.
They don't have a word for workaholic.
Nobody was a workaholic. Where the fuck did that came from?
I know, right?
You know what I'm saying? I mean, what happened?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
No, well, that says a lot, you know? And they talk about, they want to do this thing where we have like a three-day work week. I would just have to pick up two jobs then.
Yeah, that's
you can't afford anything, which is kind of leading into what I was going to talk about, is how over the past, I don't know, say 6-7 years, there's been this looting or draining or siphoning off of the country's wealth and going into private hands.
And it's really scary, obvious. And interesting and obvious.
Yeah.
And if you're not aware of...
get out from underneath the rock.
If you're not aware of how much of a scam the Federal Reserve is and fractional reserve banking, and the fact that when you deposit $100 in the bank, they're allowed to now loan that $100 out, if I'm not mistaken, 9 times over.
Yeah, it's somewhere between.
Nine or 10 times, I believe. So they
don't have to have any actual assets to back it up.
We went off the gold standard a long time ago.
Yeah. So
we are on
Nixon
a fiat currency. Let me tell you, I'm doing a little bit of Bitcoin mining right now. And it's really similar to what I saw when I used to do. I used to play EverQuest, like World of Warcraft. These are like very elaborate. It's basically Dungeons and Dragons with balls, because you have a computer that aids you to create these visuals that up until, you know, the age of computers, a dungeon master or somebody who is very eloquent would create these visuals with their words. But when you have a 3D role-playing game like EverQuest, or you can, it's a rich reality that you can create for yourself. You can have a whole group of people that you can run. Like,
completely immerse yourself
you
in
can,
it.
So I was deep in it. You know, I had a team, a guild that I played on, yada, yada. One of the things that amazed me back then is that you could hunt for stuff in the game. You could go and, like, find a sword of whatever or a shield of whatever, a chanted this shield or what. Or you could just go find a spawn point where the baddies kept coming out from and just camp it and literally just kill the same bad guy over and over and over again and get money off of him each time. They called it platinum. And then if once you had 10,000 platinum, there was actually a market
to sell it.
Like,
so is that kind of like what Bitcoin is? It's like
10,000 platinum equaled so much real world money.
Ah, gotcha.
And so legitimately, if you were a computer programmer, if you were one of the people at that game, you could create a character.
That all that does.
No, you don't even have to have the character do it. If you created the game, you could literally print your own money.
So do you think that's why the Federal Reserve is trying to shut down Bitcoin or take it over?
I have a Bitcoin. I have a commemorative Bitcoin that a friend of mine got for me. They only did so many. And on it, it says decentralize the banks or decentralize banking or something. So their whole push is to remove. I mean, imagine if you were to go to a merchant. Okay, and say, you know, like, I want to buy a new car. And they, you know, all right, we take Bitcoin. You hand them the Bitcoin. There's no Visa involved in that transaction.
No interest, there's no MasterCard, no.
There's no merchant fees. There's no nothing. You just handed them the equivalent of, you know, this much value for this vehicle. So it cuts a lot of those extra hands that are in the pot right out of the loop because you're doing a transaction person to person, if you will, or account to account. And another interesting place where that could play, and, like, you know, the when I heard the podcast, this guy was Antonopoulos, was talking about, they call him the Bitcoin Jesus. He was saying, like, just for example, like a pimp and a prostitute role. Okay, so the prostitute could go, and like I said, I realize this is kind of a ridiculous example, but it illustrates the point. Prostitute could go get her regular rate, $100, $200, $500, $1,000, whatever, okay? And so that goes to her pimp. But then if she's getting her tips, she have him tip her in Bitcoin, and then
that eliminates the, pimp, the hand the
pimp,
in her pocket.
The pimp never sees that money.
What a great analogy, especially if you compare them to the pimp to the Fed.
Yeah, well, exactly. That is a great point. I didn't think about
that.
Because
a lot of people, and I'm sure more and more people are becoming aware of it, but I found out years ago that the Federal Reserve is an independent bank that's owned by the 12 richest banking families.
And they just do the parade of the turkeys, the turkey trot. They just do the parade of the lemons. Well, this guy who's running it over here, now he becomes a Goldman Sachs over there. And so, yeah, they just shuffle the positions around amongst their cronies, whoever's running the show.
What they do is they essentially, the money that we spend, the country America spends, they loan us money, and then we pay like an exorbitant, like 30-35% interest on that money.
So every dollar
money
that's
printed, we could be printing ourselves without having to pay, which is why they shut down when people started minting their silver coins. Even though it was totally legal for them to do that, they got shut down.
Right.
They're trying to shut down Bitcoin because they have the corner on the market.
Yeah, well, they hold all, that's the control.
And that is the same money, the same bloodlines that have had control of the planet for thousands of years.
We've been warned all
Kennedy,
throughout.
Eisenhower.
Yep.
Jackson was the first president to, like, shut down the central bank, and they tried to kill him 6 times.
So we're, you know, even mentioning this stuff, I feel like, you know, we are possibly waking, potentially sleeping giants. But, you know, it's the least that I feel like we could do. I mean,
I think personally that it's too late.
I don't.
I'm a bit of a cynic.
Yeah.
You know, and the reason I say that is because of human nature.
Yeah.
And the people that even though it's fiat money and it's not real and it's illusion, those people still hold the power, and they get their own psychopaths that they employ to scare the rest of the masses.
Right, that aren't playing by the rules and know the rules better than anybody else. They know how to play and break and bend the rules.
Well, take a perfect example of Wesley Snipes. He tried to play the whole sovereign thing. He tried to, like, look, this is unconstitutional. I don't have to pay this. Oh, really? So they made an example of him.
Yeah, I think he got some bad advice, just so you know.
Well, I think he did too. But I understand where he was coming from.
Well, definitely.
And it was basically like, look, you pay up or you're going to go to prison and your acting career is over.
Well, I know that a lot of the problem with this Sovereign Man movement is that it was started, if I'm not mistaken, with the Free Man movement that was originated out of Canada.
Right.
And so their setup is obviously much different than ours. And so I think people were trying to follow the template that was set up by people in the Free Man movement for Canada. And so that's why I think the distinction is that the Sovereign Man movement, I think, is for the United States.
Or if you look at the trends that have been going on, we've been moving toward a cashless society. Okay.
Yeah. Well, money is now just ones and zeros on a computer.
If you want to control a population, what do? First, you get control of the education system. So the people no longer have critical thinking skills.
Definitely. All they're doing is just for
once you've done that, then you start getting control of the food and the water supply.
Which we know they have. I mean, oil barons, I don't know if you're aware of this, but oil barons, people that used to speculate on oil under the ground.
Now speculate on water. Did you know that the Bush family bought up the entire aquifer in Uruguay?
That's crazy. No, I didn't know that.
Yes, that's when the two daughters went down there and had all the scandals and them partying and stuff. They went down there.
To go make deals about the aquifer. Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
I'm moving to Uruguay.
Well, when you say that, you know, you think that it's all going to hell in a handbasket, you know, I mean, I think that the end is a new beginning.
I agree.
A new ending is a new beginning, and on and on and on. And I think that everything will be okay in the end. And if it isn't okay,
maybe I should qualify that a little bit better.
Well, let me just finish my quote. If it isn't okay, then it isn't the end.
Either way, it's not the end.
So yeah, no.
I didn't mean to imply that.
Yeah, but, I mean, I can see this paradigm coming apart, and one of the things that scares me the most is when they start talking about handcuffing the internet in some way.
And they're working hard.
Oh, I
on
know.
That.
You better believe they are. And when I see the apathy about things like NDAA and those laws that they're trying to pass to control the internet. You know, right now they talk about watching us, and you know, and anybody who the NSA revelations that came out recently of them listening to everything and collecting everything and yada, yada, yada.
And they've been doing that for decades.
Anybody who was surprised by that information is, I'm sorry, a bit of a rube, because that's their job. That's what they do. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if you, my dad.
I think it's the way it's being applied and the information's being used. I think it's what people are afraid of.
Well, I mean, they backbuild investigations now.
Oh, yeah.
They have the person dead to rights. They have evidence because they have the taps. They have the different, you know, they have access to information. So they have proof, but none of it they can use in court. So then what they have to do.
Yet.
Well, then what they but have to do is they have to go back, build an investigation. So they have to surreptitiously pull the guy over for a bad
unless
break.
Unless they invoke
light.
The Patriot Act.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But
then
I mean,
it's just rendition, dude, and you're gone.
Well, yeah. But you know that's not something that they, you know, I think they want to reserve that for when it's necessary. I don't think they want to just throw out the Patriot Act for every Tom, Dick, and Harry. But
the FBI certainly has been. I think the
standard procedure is that, like I said, they backbuild an investigation. They come up with some surreptitious reason to get the person jammed up. And, oh, you also happen to have 30 pounds of coke in your car when we pulled you over for a minor traffic infraction.
Right.
You know, and so that's how they get them. Well, how did they know to pull them over?
That's a whole other topic for another show.
Yeah. But, you know, so how did they know to pull them over at that exact moment? Well, you know, according to the report, it was just coincidence. But is it coincidence or is it conspiracy?
Yeah, were they being monitored and they knew? And
right,
so,
of
but that comes upon a person like, you know, if you know you're being watched, you know you're being listened to, don't post stupid stuff like that.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, people that post themselves posing with cash and drugs, what the hell is that?
The other thing
that's like saying, come and arrest me.
Well,
all the police departments monitor that stuff.
Well, and then also at the same time, you got to understand that there are agent provocateurs everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And
one
of the things that I see on the web all the time that scares me is, to me, it looks like an attempt to disarm us. Because I feel like a lot of the posts incite people, you know, against the cops. You know, look at this person doing that. And then when you actually watch the video, I mean, I'm not coming. Believe me, I support police and, you know, anybody who's got the cojones to go out and
you
do
couldn't
that
pay
type,
me enough to do that
you
job.
Couldn't
I feel
pay
for
me,
them.
No. So, I mean, I'm with you there. So I'm not saying that the cops are always right in these situations, but I feel like there's like a concerted effort to paint them as these bad guys when, you know, no one's looking at the other side of the fact that this, how tough this job is. They're taking their life in their hand. They're
only looking at, Ferguson.
They're only looking at the fact that they're using extreme force. And, you know,
well, I mean, there is a big movement of militarization of the police going on.
There's no doubt about that. And that's one point. But I feel like people posting videos on the web of here's another cop, you know, abusing his power. Here's another cop abusing his power. I mean, it's good in one sense, but I almost feel like it's a little bit agent provocateur.
Well, it's the same. It's the same thing they do when it's a post that, you know, has a racial overtone. Like, okay, it's a big deal because they shot a white kid, but it's not a big deal because they shot a black kid, and that's race baiting. And that is also perpetuating the same kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's fear-mongering on all levels.
Right.
And that is what the TV does. It's called programming for a reason.
That's a good point.
You know, and when I say I'm cynical about things, it's because you and I have both been in situations where we've seen the best and the absolute worst in human nature.
Yes.
Okay? And I think that we will eventually get through this. I think that as a collective, we will evolve. But I think the shit's going to hit the fan.
Oh, definitely.
And there's going to be a lot of starving people. They're going to cull the herd, whatever you want to call it. And then who knows? I mean, if they really plan for all contingencies, and they've planned for this new, you know, order out of chaos that they're planning.
Well, I mean, I don't want to sound like Alex Jones, but the FEMA camps didn't get built for nothing.
That's true.
Okay, so that's, I mean, you know, those camps but are there in just such an emergency. It's for just such an emergency. And, you know the Georgia Guidestones, right?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Okay. I mean, so you're talking about calling the herd. If that sounds inflammatory or that sounds ridiculous, they etched it in stone and they put it in multiple languages in case you can't read English.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they did get defaced recently.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was pretty good. It is. Backlash.
It's pretty crazy.
At the same time, you know, I got to wonder how much is just my mind playing tricks on me. I always wonder that. You know, because I don't want to feed too much into the
Well, because we
paranoia.
All create our reality, so right. Why buy into it too much?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, that, and I'm glad you said that, because that brings me back to one of the points I wanted to make initially when we were talking about how there's this struggle and it's too late, or isn't it? In my mind, there is a war going on, and the war is not, and the war is between good and evil. And the field of battle is in each one of our minds.
Oh, yeah.
That's the way I like to look at it. And at any moment, if you took a scale and put all the good people in the earth that have good intentions in their mind and weighted against all the bad people on the earth that have bad intentions in their mind, I sort of believe that that's going on at all times.
Well, I think there's more good people. But what I think is the people that are the bad people realize this, and that is why they perpetuate the whole fear thing. Because you can't be in a higher state of awareness or consciousness
if you're scared. Yeah, your fight
or flight. If you've had a really good trip, you know what I'm talking about. All it takes is that one bad thought to ruin the whole trip. Yeah. And if we all create our reality with our thoughts and our minds, we're all created in God's image, we're all a sliver of the universe, we're all part of this holographic fractal, then what one thinks affects another, and so on. And you get this critical mass. And that could go either way.
Yeah.
And what I was going to allude to is, yeah, I really think that the worst is going to happen, but I think the best is going to come out of it.
Yeah.
Regardless of the control structures that are in place. Well, I mean, if you look at the medieval times and then the Renaissance coming out of the Inquisitions and all that stuff.
Flourishing.
Eventually, it's part of a cycle.
Right. And that's what I was getting at, is how much of it is my mind playing tricks on me, or how much is it just part of the natural cycle?
And let's look at how...
I mean, the plague wasn't planned. The plague came.
Or was it?
I don't know. We weren't alive back then.
There's a lot of conspiracies on that, and that is another show.
That's another show.
But, you know.
No, but I agree. It could be part of a natural process.
And if you really think about it, as crazy as people are and as fundamental as they are in their belief systems, like so narrow-minded, they don't realize that all these realities are truths
Christianity is a truth. If that's what you believe and that's what you're into, then it's real.
Yes.
If you are into Islam and that's what you believe, that's real.
If 100,000 screaming soccer fans want a goal, they're going to get it because they believe it's going to happen.
So if you think about it from, let's look at it from the psychopath's point of view. Okay.
The whole world is
war
chaos to him.
Is the hammer and the anvil that pounds out the new form and the new shape.
Sure.
And you've got all these Muslims, you've got all these Christians, and everybody's so convinced that they're right. There's no way you're ever going to change it. What are you going to do? You just
fight it
down, wipe it all out, and you start over again.
Yep.
And I understand that. Doesn't mean I like it, but at the same time, I don't think that this is the only lifetime that we live. And I think we've chosen to be here for a reason.
I'll go with that. I don't know. I know I've definitely chosen to be in this moment. Definitely. I don't know how much control I had about putting myself here initially, you know, but
well, think
along
of all the
way.
Things that you know, because we've talked and shared a lot of stories. Think of all the things that we've experienced or done that have helped us, because we've been able to learn from it. Some people don't.
That's the trick.
And it's made us, even though we did all these awful things, we are really good people because we learned from that.
Yeah.
And it makes you compassionate for other people that are suffering, that are going through things. Like now when I get on Facebook and somebody posts something and the horrible things that people say to each other, I mean, I can understand if it's you're trolling and you're joking, but and it's even worse on YouTube.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Oh, no. And I know people actually get, well, people will get into video wars where they'll post reactions to somebody's comment and, oh, so-and-so number 52, you think I'm this? And it's just like, man, your world, the world that you are manifesting around yourself is full of so much vitriol and hate. And it's kind of like the same thing with...
And the more you focus on it, the more you
the
create.
The more it comes, it's like resonates and it comes back at you. It's like when you see people posting stuff constantly about animals being abused on Facebook and stuff like that. It's like, I'm all about raising awareness for abused animals, but don't like... You know, it's like
hit you over the head with it.
Oh man!
Just like the old fat white people trying to get you to donate money to save these poor children. I researched a lot of those organizations, and they only pay out like 8% of what they raise.
Yeah,
those fat white people are making money off of it.
Yeah, that's you know, when I first started going out downtown in 911 days, I'm showing my age here a little bit. It was some of the first times I'd ever had to deal with people hitting you up for spare change.
Oh yeah,
you know, I was right around that. I hadn't done a lot of,
I didn't have to deal with that until I went to California.
Right. We didn't have a whole lot of that, and I didn't see a lot of it until I literally was like down in downtown Tampa nightclubs at the end of the night, and I didn't know the first couple of times it happened to me. I was caught so off guard, I didn't know how to handle it, and I knew my face was betraying. And I felt so guilty because I've always been fortunate, and I would like to say most of my life grateful, but especially as of lately, grateful for how much I have. And so having this person come up to me and just reveal, like, in one sentence, as soon as I meet them, I'm so desperate that I'm begging you for help.
Right. You know, and I learned the difference in the type of
beggars. Some of them beg, and some of them are bad,
some of them just need help.
So it's like, you know, I had to develop this like callus for them. And, and I feel like it's sort of the same callus that I've put up for those ads that you see on TV and for, you know.
And there's so many of them now. You help out a couple. I'm like, man, I wish I could give change to all the poor.
Well, I mean,
was going to lead us into the next segment. People going to jail for feeding the homeless.
Oh, I saw that.
What the hell is that?
Yeah,
31 cities now have ordinances where you can't feed the homeless. I understand that there are indigent people that sleep in business doorways, that urinate on their entryway and stuff. I mean, I've been in downtown St. Pete and Tampa and Santa Monica and L.A., I know. But the largest majority of these homeless people are people who have lost their homes, have lost their jobs.
Or because of, you know, cuts in different budgets and stuff like that. They're mentally incapable, but there's really no place to put them. Can't put them in jail because they don't work there. Can't put them in a hospital because they're not really medically sick. They're just, if like, psychologically not stable. So they end up just getting kind of left, you know.
Yeah, there needs to be some sort of ordinance and regulation with dealing with them. But not feeding them in a restaurant. harassing people, for helping them, that's just wrong in my
book. It's just so funny because, like, you know, in California, if you have leftovers as you're leaving the restaurant, if you take leftovers with you from the restaurant, or, you know, like your takeaway food, whatever, if you're, you know, a lot of people will do it just to leave it somewhere on top of, like, they leave it on top of the garbage.
Because you can't actually hand it to somebody.
Right, and you wait 5 minutes, it'll be gone. Oh, so it's like there's this whole, like, movement in parts of California to help kind of get this, you know, food to people who need it, just using your leftovers, which, so that's just to tell you the spectrum of, you know, and it's like feeding alligators. You know, you tell people don't feed the alligators. Why? Because they're going to keep coming around. It could get dangerous. Yeah. They crap everywhere. It starts stinking.
We know how many crazy crackheads and homeless people that are really nuts that are on the streets.
Oh, yeah.
The police have to deal with them, and I understand that. And it makes it hard for the people who are really trying to get, you know, there's a difference between a handout and a hand up.
Yeah. Now, and so then that also goes into another point that I keep thinking about, and I'm glad I want to bring it up here. Some people live their life, like, I actually remember somebody telling me, we were in one of our rarer moments in rarefied air, relaxing and enjoying the view, and it was one of those moments where it's like, yeah, these are the days, or whatever. And almost immediately, that joy and that moment of joy was dispersed, because he said, yep, right about now is when I start to feel like something bad's going to happen. And what I don't think he realized, and maybe possibly a lot of... There's probably a good portion of people out, and homeless people out there that have the same issue. You're kind of bringing that onto yourself.
Oh yeah.
By, like,
I've been homeless,
creating.
So
that,
I understand how it works.
Right, but by creating that paradigm that that other shoe's gonna drop any moment, something bad's gonna happen. You've literally magnetized yourself to chaos.
Oh yeah. I was only homeless for a couple of weeks. But I realized that because the people that I was around, they move around at night, not in the daytime.
Right.
And I started talking to them, and what you just described, and I'm like, I am not going to fall into this trap.
They'll tell you. I mean, you'll be like, when you first meet them, oh man, I had this. Hey, we got our car towed. $12 would really help me out. So, you know, you dig in your pocket, you give them your last $12, whatever. You're a good-hearted person. Next time you see them, it's another story. Oh, my doctor won't be. But those $12.
If you've had to deal with them before, those kind of people are easy to spot.
Right.
All you have to do is ask them a few questions.
Right. And you realize they're a perpetual.
Yeah.
Victim.
Yeah, I ran out of gas. And, well, let me give you a ride to your car. Well, no, that's okay, man.
The car, the tire,
I was working at a bar in Tampa. Cables. I got off work and I came to the radio station, took care of a few things, and I'm on my way going down Dale Mabry. And I'm pulling into the subway. I'm like, man, I'm really hungry. As I'm about to go in, this guy on a bike, he's like, excuse me, sir. I haven't eaten in 2 days and I'm really, really hungry. I am not a drug addict. Out of that, would you buy me a sandwich?
Yeah, and
I'm like, you really just want me to buy you some food? He's like, yeah. I said, absolutely. And I bought this guy a sandwich. We sat down. We prayed together. He was a Buddhist.
Nice.
And we broke bread together. And then I went on my way. I felt good about that.
Yeah.
And the whole thing of being in service to others is, it's really the most self-serving thing you could do, because you're really making yourself feel better.
Yeah.
Even though you're helping somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's the whole symbolism of a master washing the disciples' feet.
All right. So I'll lay out a challenge to our listeners. And this is very much in line with what you're saying. And I've done this. It's amazing. It can change your life. It's simple. Go out and do at least one random act of kindness. And it has to be anonymous. You have to go to someone you don't know and do something nice for them.
And don't go tell everybody, because it defeats the whole
anonymous.
Purpose.
It's anonymous. The only people that are allowed to know are you and that person that you're doing the nice thing for.
And people should do that every day. Open a door for somebody, help somebody pick something up.
It's a habit, and that's why I'm putting it out there as a challenge, because I'm hoping that people will do it, and then once they've done it, they're going to get that good feeling, and they're going to get addicted to it.
Yeah.
And they're going to want it again.
And it's going to affect other people. You're going to attract other people that have that same vibe going on.
So pick. You will know the right – when you're leaving the grocery store, grab a small bouquet of flowers and give it to the when you're at the gas station attendant right around the corner from your house, who's always there working the late shift, it will make her day or his day, or her day if they're flowers, whatever. But you get my point. Do something random. Do and if you, it's so neat because if you tune your mind to see the opportunities when they come, you can find joy in even the simplest of things in life. And so look for your opportunity to do a random act of kindness.
That's the whole thing of mastering yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's people. When I was doing martial arts, I asked my teacher about the tea service. And he explained to me what that's about. And that's not about serving tea. It's about mastering yourself.
Right.
And it literally comes down to mastering your fears and releasing them.
That's interesting you should say that. One of the things that I heard recently about when you start meditating heavily.
Which I've done.
You will notice that there are literally like tropes that your brain will bring out. These regular like poems, these negative thought loops.
Oh, yeah.
And there'll be like maybe 5 or 6 or 8 of them. If you've meditate, once you meditate and you really kind of sit, they call it, I think it noism, noism or something. Anyways, you realize that when you've meditated long enough that you realize that your brain has a finite set of negative thought patterns.
And once they're gone.
And they're like songs. And if you can just say, you know what? I'm done listening to that song and throw that tape out or throw that CD or MP3 or whatever you want to call it. Throw it out. When you realize that it's not doing you any good to carry that baggage around and every time it comes back around, you're like, oh, there's that silly thought again. I know it's garbage. I know it's just my mind working against me. Eventually, it's like knowing is half the battle. It goes away. It doesn't have the same power. You bring it into the light out of the darkness, and it loses its strength against you.
And that explains why when you watch TV, it is endless violence and extreme like nonsense, mind-numbing stupidity. Especially if you watch the news. That is fear-mongering at its peak.
That goes back to that fight or flight and keeping you in a constant state of like,
because you know, crime statistics, the crime rate has actually gone down dramatically.
Yeah. Violent. We're living in the least violent time, technically speaking. There's some statistic. I can't quantify that number, but supposedly we're living in the least violent time in history.
Unless, of course, you're living somewhere where America is bombing the hell out of.
Right.
And so. And that's part of it. I mean, and it's tough because we're bombarded by this negative reinforcement constantly. I remember in the 80s saying to myself, why are all these shows police shows? Now everything is a police show or a lawyer show or a politician show. Yeah. And it's all about stopping the bad guys.
Yeah, getting the bad guy.
And I'm like, man, it's like they're trying to create a police state. Look where we're at now. Yeah, well, everybody in America has that policing mentality.
Well, it's funny. They say that a lot of the military stuff that they're getting, these this upcycled, to use your word, stuff that the military no longer has use for, they get it from the seizure budgets.
Yeah.
So when they seize money or they seize cars or they seize stuff, seize property,
and that just feeds more corruption, more fear, more gang mentality within the police departments.
There was some story recently about a margarita maker that a police department seized and was using, and they're told outright by their bosses or whatever, by their captains or whatever, look at this money as like, you know, what you would dream to have, or like, you know, your slush fund. You know, like they tell them, use it as a slush fund. What you can't get with the regular budget, you can use this.
Because that's what the military and black ops been doing forever.
It's a page right out of their book.
It totally is. Yeah. And it's filtered down. And, you know, people are like, well, why are they militarizing? Well, if you've got a group of guys in a small town that have IQs under 100,
you better get
that
had
that
something.
Almost like that controlled jock, I'm afraid of you kind of mentality.
Yeah.
They're going to bully the population into submission.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of it comes down to. I'm not saying all police are like that.
Definitely not. No.
I've trained and worked with a lot, and they're very cool. But now it's a general rule that they don't hire anybody that's intelligent. There have been several studies put out on this, and they do that on purpose Because they do what they're told.
Yeah,
they were given a program, and they can only run that program.
The smart people can only stand so much hypocrisy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen. And if you look at how that's gone, I mean, it's filtered down. It's how it was in the military,
yeah,
too.
That's true.
You don't want a smart soldier because he's like, no, I'm not going to go out there.
Yeah, are you crazy? I'll get
you
shot.
You go out there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, grunts. You know, the other thing that's funny is some of those videos that I've been seeing on the web, they show how the newscasters are all reading off the same script.
Oh, isn't it crazy? And they're clueless. They're all nitwits.
To me, all the journalists care about is being in front of the camera and camera time.
And I've met so many of them. So
they couldn't cut it in a normal aspect of the entertainment industry, so they settled for something because they're not journalists. They're not real journalists. I mean, there are some out there.
There's hardly any real journalists.
I don't know if you watched the last week with John Oliver's show. He's like, it's like the Colbert Report or like the Daily Show.
Yeah, but the fact that we have to get our real news from satire?
That's what it is, and that's scary. It's like the news is presented to us as a joke. Can you believe how ridiculous this is?
So you laugh it off.
Right.
It's the same thing, like people are like, why don't people rise up? Why don't they do this and that? Because you have an endless stream of movies where you get to vicariously live that experience. The hero is wrong. The people were wrong. The hero comes back and he kills the bad guys. Everybody's like, hey! And then they go home and they don't want to fight anymore.
And if you're talking about the Bourne movies, the main character happens to be part of the MK Ultra mind control program, and the reason why he can't remember who he is because they played games with his brain.
And that goes back, was it Mulholland Drive or Mulholland?
Yeah, all the way. I mean, they if you look at
where they create altars, and that's what that's really about.
They've been trying.
David Lynch has been big on that stuff for a very long time.
And they use trauma, and they use drugs, and they use sleep deprivation,
and that brings us back to the media again. How many kids watch? I was thinking, how many kids witness this kind of violence? They don't need the arena anymore.
No.
They got it on big screens everywhere.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong, I play video games too, but I know I'm not really killing somebody.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it's a frequency that you reach. It's a frenzied. You know, like
I can't even watch a lot of the horror movies anymore.
I don't watch horror movies.
I mean, I like them if they're campy, they're cheesy.
Right.
But like there's all the abduction and torture and slasher murder movies. Yeah, I mean, some people think that's cool, but man, that actually hurts when I watch that stuff.
I don't even want to. I mean, my girlfriend invited me to, or my wife, my girlfriend, she invited me to the Halloween Horror Nights over at Busch Gardens. And I'm sorry, but you're going to hear. I saw it on Facebook, but I checked it out on Snopes and it was fake. Guy supposedly went on a rampage in a haunted house with a chainsaw. But so that one was fake. But you know that's going to happen. I mean, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out.
Eventually.
Hey, a great place. Just like the same way when I went to New York and we were in Times Square. And I said, oh, look, there's Dora. Somebody dressed up like Dora. Oh, look, there's somebody dressed up like SpongeBob. Oh, look, there's another SpongeBob. Oh, look, there's another Dora. Hey, if you were a pedophile, that would be a great job for you to take. Nobody can even tell what you look like.
Yeah.
Go up and take pictures with kids all day. Hey, can I get a copy of that?
You could dress like a priest.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. But, yeah. So.
And that's another topic I want to go on a show, how the Catholic Church has been an institution that breeds pedophilia and torture.
And protects them.
And, you know, we're not even going to get into that. Yeah, like I said, it's a whole other topic. I don't want us to run too long on this.
Yeah.
I want to keep it short and sweet. We hope that you will actually comment and send us some feedback. Let us know what you'd like to hear about, what you'd like to talk about, and we will do what we can to once we're really rolling with this, be able to interact with you, Skype with you, take phone calls.
Yeah, we want to do all that, definitely. And you know, the other thing you can tell us is any of the other podcasts that you're listening to, so that we can get an idea what you're into, or maybe you could turn us on to personally. One or two of the podcasts that I listen to, the Joe Rogan Experience, and you know, one of the things I was going to bring up, and I'll just mention this kind of in closing, Joe talked about on one of his podcasts, and this goes to what you were saying about the police and that there's good ones and you know, and there's other ones that kind of get drunk with the power. He noticed just in the little bit of time that he worked as a security for like a festival grounds, how quickly the us against them mentality kicks in.
Oh, yeah. And that's just part of human nature, man.
It is. It really is. So if you're a cop and you're working 8, 10, 12 hours a day, eventually that us against them mentality seeps in on some level, and it takes a strong person to keep that balance. And I know there's a lot of good cops out there, but you know, at the same time, I know that a lot of them struggle with that. So, you know, we're watching, and hopefully the powers that be will find some benevolence in their heart.
I was going to bring up Ferguson and talk about that a little bit. I think we'll also save that one because that's going to really stir up a hornet's nest because people are not going to like my point of view on that.
So good on you, dude. I think you're onto something. I think we're definitely onto something. And again, if you've got
aliens.
Other podcasts or anything you want to talk to us about,
we should get somebody from MUFON in here.
Sure, the Mutual UFO Network.
Absolutely.
Yes, and SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
There you go.
Why not? And we can get a couple other acronyms in here.
We could have a channel or come in here a medium, and we could channel Carl Sagan.
I'm putting it out there that I'd love to have Duncan Trussell on our podcast from the Duncan Trussell Family Hour because that guy is awesome.
Awesome. All right, make sure you stay tuned. Post, share, like, all that good stuff. Do it.
Zen Trips, EDM Radio Network.